Chapter 6. Peculiar Evidence. Dupin continued his explanation. The next question is, how did he get down? I figured that out when we walked around the building. There is a lightning rod about 5.5 feet from the window in question. From this rod, it would have been impossible for anyone to reach the window itself. I observed, however, that the shutters of the fourth story were quite wide, about 3.5 feet. When we saw them from the rear of the house, they were both about half open. In other words, they stood at right angles to the wall. It is probable that the police, besides myself, examined the back of the building. However, they could not have noticed how wide they were. Or maybe they did, but since they had concluded that escaping through the window was impossible, they would not have seen the importance of the width of the shutters. It was clear to me, however, that the shutter belonging to the window at the head of the bed would, if swung fully back to the wall, reach to within 2 feet of the lightning rod. It was also evident that an extraordinarily agile and brave being could reach the shutter from the lightning rod. He could grab onto the shutter and swing to the window, and in this way enter the house. Keep in mind that I am talking about a very unusual degree of agility that would be required for such a difficult and dangerous feat. I want to show you first that the feat is not impossible, but second, and chiefly, I want you to understand how extraordinarily the agility must have been. You will say, no doubt, using the language of the law, that to make my case, I should look to the simple explanation rather than the extraordinary. This may be the practice in law, but I prefer to use reason. My goal is to find the truth. I now want to draw your attention to the very unusual activity I have just described. Now, consider the very unusual voice. No two people could agree on what language was being spoken. All did agree, though, that no clear words were uttered. When he said this, I began to get an idea of what he was implying. I was close to understanding what he was getting at, but without yet fully understanding it, my friend went on. "You will see," he said, "that I have shifted the question from the mode of escape to that of entrance. I wanted to imply that the murderer entered and left in the same way. Let us now return to thinking about the room. What did we see? The drawers of the dresser had been rifled through, but many items of clothing were still in them. But we do not know if anything was missing, because we do not know what was there before." Madame L'Espanaye and her daughter kept to themselves. They did not have visitors and seldom went out. They would not have needed a lot of clothes. Those found were at least of as good quality as any likely to be owned by these ladies. If a thief had taken any, why did he not take the best? Why did he not take all? In a word, why did he abandon 4,000 francs in gold to take some clothing? The gold was abandoned. Nearly the whole sum mentioned by Monsieur Mignot, the banker, was discovered in bags upon the floor. I wish you, therefore, to remove from your thoughts the idea of money as the motive. The police get stuck on the idea of motive. The money being delivered to the house was a coincidence. Coincidences 10 times as remarkable as this happen every day. Coincidences, in general, get in the way of people who know nothing about the theory of probabilities. Had the gold been missing, it might have been more than a coincidence. It might suggest a motive, but the gold was left behind. Keep in mind the points that I have drawn to your attention. There's the peculiar voice and the unusual agility, and there's the absence of motive in a murder as terrible as this. Now, let's look at the murder itself. Here is a woman strangled to death by hand and thrust up a chimney, head downward. The latter action is especially unusual. What kind of a mind would think to do that? And think of how much strength it would have taken to thrust the body up the chimney. It took several people to get it out. Think of the strength it would require to thrust it up. Turn now to other indications that the strength used must have been extreme. On the hearth were thick locks of gray human hair. These had been torn out by the roots. Consider the great force necessary to tear 20 or 30 hairs from the head together. You saw the locks in question. It was 500,000 together, and their roots had bits of flesh mixed in with them. It would have required enormous strength to do that. What's more, the throat of the old lady was not merely cut, but the head was nearly cut off. The instrument used was a mere razor. Look also at the brutal ferocity of these deeds. As for the bruises on Madame L'Espanaye's body, I do not include these in the evidence of extraordinary strength. The police said they would have been inflicted by some blunt object, and they were right. But the blunt object was not a weapon used by a man. It was the pavement stone in the yard. The victim fell from the fourth-story window onto the pavement. That is what caused her bruises. This idea, however, simple it may now seem, escaped the police for the same reason that the width of the shutters escaped them. They thought it was impossible that the windows had been opened at all. That assumption halted any further investigation into the truth. Let us review. We have a bedroom in odd disarray. We have evidence of amazing agility. We have evidence of superhuman strength and two acts of murder more brutal and ferocious than we've heard of before. What's more, there is no motive. And finally, we have a voice that sounds foreign to the ears of men of many nations, a voice that does not seem to speak in words. What do you think? I felt a chill as Dupin asked me the question. A crazy person, I said, has done this deed. Some crazy person who escaped from a mental hospital. In some respects, he replied, your idea is not irrelevant. But the voices of crazy people are never found to sound like that peculiar voice heard upon the stairs. Crazy people are of some nation, and their language, however hard to understand, uses words. Besides, the hair of a crazy person is not such as I now hold in my hand. I took this little bit from the fingers of Madame L'Espanaye. Tell me what you can make of it. Dupin, I exclaimed, this hair is most unusual. This is no human hair. I have not said that it is, he replied. But before we decide on this point, have a look at this. I made this little drawing based on the descriptions of the deep indentations of fingernails upon the throat of Mademoiselle L'Espanaye. Dupin spread the paper upon the table before us. You will perceive, continued my friend, that this drawing gives the idea of a firm and fixed hold. There is no slipping apparent. Each finger has retained, possibly until the death of the victim, the original fearful grasp. See if you can place all your fingers, at the same time, in the impressions as you see them. I could not. But the paper is spread out on a flat surface, he said. The human throat is round. Here is a log that is about the size of a human neck. Let us wrap the drawing around it and try again. I did so, but it was even more difficult. This, I said, is not the mark of a human hand. Now read this passage, replied Dupin, offering me a description of an orangutan from Borneo. It described the huge size, the great strength and agility, and the wild ferocity of the animal. I understood the full horrors of the murder at once. The description of the fingers, I said as I finished reading, is just like this drawing. I see that no animal but an orangutan could have made the finger marks as you have traced them. This bit of hair, too, is the same as that of the animal described. But I cannot possibly understand the particulars of this horrific mystery. Besides, there were two voices heard arguing. All agreed that one was a Frenchman. True, and you will remember that almost everyone heard him say, Mon Dieu! It was described as being said in argument. Upon these two words, therefore, I have mainly built my hopes of a full solution of the mystery. A Frenchman knew of the murder. It is likely that he was innocent of all participation in the horrible and bloody acts which took place. The orangutan may have escaped from him. He may have followed it to the room, but been unable to recapture it. It is still at large. These latter conclusions, that the Frenchman is innocent and that the orangutan is still at large, are only guesses that have yet to be proven. If the Frenchman is indeed innocent, he will respond to my ad.
Thank you.